Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents The Stormlight Archive, Book 1, The Way of Kings, Part 1. Narrated by Dylan Lynch. Performed by Robbie Gay as Kaladin Stormblessed, Casey Platt as Shallan Devar, Andy Clements as Dalinar Colin, Tim Getman as Adolin Colin, Zoe Badovinic as Yasnin Colin, and Nora Ashrati as Syl, with Mort Shelby, Drew Kopis, Evan Casey, Christopher Sheeran, Christopher Walker, Bradley Smith, Mahbood Ibrahimzadeh, Michael Glenn, Michael John Casey, Terence Azelford, Thomas Penny, Matthew Keenan, James Konacek, Richard Rowan, Stephen Carpenter, Colleen Delaney, Thomas Keegan, Scott McCormick, Eric Messner, Sasha Olenek, Bob Payne, Chris Davenport, Christopher Graybill, Andy Brownstein, Tony Nam, David Harris, Ken Jackson, Marnie Penning, Jacob Yeh, Jeff Allen, Patrick Bussink, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Yasmin Toizone, Nick DePinto, Kimberly Gilbert, Dylan Lynch, and Tim Pabone. Kallak rounded a rocky stone ridge and stumbled to a stop before the body of a dying thunderclast. The enormous stone beast lay on its side, rib-like protrusions from its chest broken and cracked. The monstrosity was vaguely skeletal in shape, with unnaturally long limbs that sprouted from granite shoulders. The eyes were deep red spots on the arrowhead face, as if created by a fire burning deep within the stone. They faded. Even after all these centuries, seeing a thunderclast up close made Kallak shiver. The beast's hand was as long as a man was tall. He'd been killed by hands like those before, and it hadn't been pleasant. Of course, dying rarely was. He rounded the creature, picking his way more carefully across the battlefield. The plain was a place of misshapen rock and stone, natural pillars rising around him, bodies littering the ground. Few plants lived here. The stone ridges and mounds bore numerous scars. Some were shattered, blasted out sections where surge binders had fought. Less frequently, he passed cracked, oddly shaped hollows where thunderclasts had ripped themselves free of the stone to join the fray. Many of the bodies around him were human, many were not. Blood mixed, red, orange, violet. The sounds around him did not seem like the sounds of victory. Smoke curled from the occasional patches of growth or heaps of burning corpses. Even some sections of rock smoldered. The dustbringers had done their work well.
But I survived.
Kallak held hand to breast as he hastened to the meeting place.
I actually survived this time.
That was dangerous. When he died, he was sent back, no choice. When he survived the desolation, he was supposed to go back as well. Back to that place that he dreaded. Back to that place of pain and fire. What if he just decided not to go?
Perilous thoughts.
Perhaps traitorous thoughts. He hastened on his way. The place of meeting was in the shadow of a large rock formation, a spire rising into the sky. As always, the 10 of them had decided upon it before the battle. The survivors would make their way here. Oddly, only one of the others was waiting for him, Jezrian. Had the other 8 all died? It was possible. The battle had been so furious this time, one of the worst. The enemy was growing increasingly tenacious. But no. Kallak frowned as he stepped up to the base of the spire. Seven magnificent swords stood proudly there, driven point first into the stone ground. Each was a masterly work of art, flowing in design, inscribed with glyphs and patterns. He recognized each one. If their masters had died, the blades would have vanished. These blades were weapons of power beyond even shard blades. These were unique, precious. Jezrian stood outside the ring of swords, looking eastward.
Jezrian?
The figure in white and blue glanced toward him. Even after all these centuries, Jezrian looked young, like a man barely into his 30th year. His short black beard was neatly trimmed, though his once fine clothing was scorched and stained with blood. He folded his arms behind his back as he turned to Kalak.
What is this, Jezrian? Where are the others?
Departed.
Though Jezrian hadn't worn a crown in centuries, his royal manner lingered. He always seemed to know what to do.
You might call it a miracle. Only one of us died this time.
Tolinal.
His was the only blade unaccounted for.
Yes. He died holding that passage by the northern waterway.
Kalak nodded. Taln had a tendency to choose seemingly hopeless fights and win them. He also had a tendency to die in the process. He would be back now, in the place where they went between desolations. The place of nightmares. Kalak found himself shaking. When had he become so weak?
Jezrian, I cannot return this time.
Kalak stepped up and gripped the other man's arm.
I can't.
Kalak felt something within him break at the admission. How long had it been? Centuries, perhaps millennia, of torture. It was so hard to keep track. Those fires, those hooks, digging into his flesh anew each day, searing the skin off his arm, then burning the fat, then driving to the bone. He could smell it.
Almighty, I can smell it.
Leave your sword.
What?
Jezrian nodded to the ring of weapons.
I was chosen to wait for you. We weren't certain if you had survived. A decision has been made. It is time for the Oath Pact to end.
Kalak felt a sharp stab of horror.
What will that do?
Ishar believes that so long as there is one of us still bound to the Oath Pact, it might be enough. There is a chance we might end the cycle of desolations.
Kalak looked into the Immortal King's eyes. Black smoke rose from a small patch to their left. There, in Jezrian's eyes, Kalak saw anguish and grief, perhaps even cowardice. This was a man hanging from a cliff by a thread.
Almighty above, you're broken too, aren't you?
They all were. Kalak turned and walked to the side, where a low ridge overlooked part of the battlefield. There were so many corpses, and among them walked the living. Men in primitive wraps, carrying spears topped by bronze heads. Juxtaposed between them were others in gleaming plate armor. One group walked past, four men in their ragged tanned skins or shoddy leather, joining a powerful figure in beautiful silver plate, amazingly intricate. Such a contrast. Jezrian stepped up beside him.
They see us as divinities. They rely upon us, Jezrian. We're all that they have.
They have the Radiance. That will be enough.
He will not remain bound by this. The enemy, he will find a way around it. You know he will.
Perhaps.
The King of Heralds offered no further explanation.
And Taln?
The flesh burning, the fires, the pain, over and over and over.
Better that one man should suffer than 10.
Jezrian seemed so cold, like a shadow caused by heat and light falling on someone honorable and true, casting this black imitation behind. Jezrian walked back to the Ring of Swords. His own blade, formed in his hands, appearing from mist, wet with condensation.
It has been decided, Kalak. We will go our ways and we will not seek out one another. Our blades must be left. The Oath Pact ends now.
He lifted his sword and rammed it into the stone with the other seven. Jezrian hesitated, looking at the sword, then bowed his head and turned away, as if ashamed.
We chose this burden willingly. We can choose to drop it if we wish.
What do we tell the people, Jezrian? What will they say of this day?
It's simple. We tell them that they finally won. It's an easy enough lie, Who knows? Maybe it will turn out to be true.
Kalek watched Jezreel depart across the burned landscape. Finally, he summoned his own blade and slammed it into the stone beside the other eight. He turned and walked in the direction opposite from Jezreel. And yet, he could not help glancing back at the ring of swords and the single open spot. The place where the tenth sword should have gone. One of them who was lost. The one they had abandoned.
Forgive us.
The love of men is a frigid thing. A mountain stream, only 3 steps from the ice. We're his. We are his. Oh, Stormfather. We are his. It is but 1,000 days. And the other storm comes.
Collected on the first day of the week Pala of the month Shash of the year 1171, 31 seconds before death. Subject was a dark-eyed pregnant woman of middle years. The child did not survive.
Zeth, son Valano, truthless of Shinovar, wore white on the day he was to kill a king. The white clothing was a Parshendi tradition, foreign to him. But he did as his masters required and did not ask for an explanation. He sat in a large stone room baked by enormous fire pits that cast a garish light upon the revelers, causing beads of sweat to form on their skin as they danced and drank. Some fell to the ground red-faced, the revelry too much for them, their stomachs proving to be inferior wineskins. They looked as if they were dead, at least until their friends carried them out of the feast hall to waiting beds. Seth did not sway to the drums, drink the sapphire wine, or stand to dance. He sat on a bench at the back, a still servant in white robes. Few at the treaty signing celebration noticed him. He was just a servant, and Shin were easy to ignore. Most out here in the East thought Seth's kind were docile and harmless. They were generally right. The beat shook Zeth like a quartet of thumping hearts, pumping waves of invisible blood through the room. Zeth's masters, who were dismissed as savages by those in more civilized kingdoms, sat at their own tables. There were men with skin of black marbled with red, the Parshendi they were named, cousins to the more docile servant peoples known as Parshmen in most of the world, an oddity. They did not call themselves Parshendi. This was the Alethi name for them. It meant, roughly, Parshmen who can think. Neither side seemed to see that as an insult. The Parshendi had brought the musicians. At first, the Alethi Light Eyes had been hesitant. To them, drums were bass instruments of the common dark-eyed people. But wine was the great assassin of both tradition and propriety. And now the Alethi elite danced with abandon. Zeth stood and began to pick his way through the room. The revelry had lasted long enough. Even the king had retired hours ago, but many still celebrated. As he walked, Zeth was forced to step around Dalinar Colin, the king's own brother, who slumped drunken at a small table. The aging, but powerfully built man kept waving away those who tried to encourage him to bed. Where was Yasna, the king's daughter? Elikar, the king's son and heir, sat at the high table, ruling the feast in his father's absence. He was in conversation with two men, a dark-skinned Azish man who had an odd patch of pale skin on his cheek, and a thinner, Alethi-looking man who kept glancing over his shoulder. The heir's feasting companions were unimportant. Seth stayed far from the heir, skirting the sides of the room, passing the drummers. Music spren zipped through the air around them, the tiny spirits taking the form of spinning translucent ribbons. As Zeth passed the drummers, they noted him. They would withdraw soon, along with all the other Parshendi. They did not seem offended. They did not seem angry. And yet they were going to break their treaty of only a few hours. It made no sense. But Zeth did not ask questions. At the edge of the room, he passed rows of unwavering azure lights that bulged out where wall met floor. They held sapphires infused with stormlight. Profane. How could the men of these lands use something so sacred for mere illumination? Worse, the Alethi scholars were said to be close to creating new shard blades. Seth hoped that was just wishful boasting. For if it did happen, the world would be changed, likely in a way that ended with people in all countries, from distant Thelena to towering Yaakoved, speaking Alethi to their children. They were a grand people, these Alethi. Even drunk, there was a natural nobility to them. Tall and well-made, the men dressed in dark silk coats that buttoned down the sides of the chest and were elaborately embroidered in silver or gold. Each one looked a general on the field. The women were even more splendid. They wore grand silk dresses, tightly fitted, the bright colors a contrast to the dark tones favored by the men. The left sleeve of each dress was longer than the right one, covering the hand. Alethi had an odd sense of propriety. Their pure black hair was pinned up atop their heads, either in intricate weavings of braids or in loose piles. It was often woven with gold ribbons or ornaments, along with gems that glowed with stormlight. Beautiful. Profane, but beautiful. Seth left the feasting chamber behind. Just outside, he passed the doorway into the beggar's feast. It was an Alethi tradition, a room where some of the poorest men and women in the city were given a feast complementing that of the king and his guests. A man with a long gray and black beard slumped in the doorway, smiling foolishly, though whether from wine or a weak mind, Zeth could not tell.
Hey! Have you seen me?
He reached for a wineskin. So it was drink, after all. Seth brushed by, continuing past a line of statues depicting the 10 heralds from ancient Vorin theology. Yzerizay, Ishi, Kalek, Talanalat. He counted off each one and realized there were only 9 here. One was conspicuously missing. Why had Shalash's statue been removed? King Gavilar was said to be very devout in his Vorin worship. Too devout, by some people's standards. The hallway here curved to the right, running around the perimeter of the domed palace. They were on the king's floor, 2 levels up, surrounded by rock walls, ceiling, and floor. That was profane. Stone was not to be trod upon. But what was he to do? He was truthless. He did as his masters demanded. Today, that included wearing white. Loose white trousers tied at the waist with a rope, and over them, a filmy shirt with long sleeves open at the front. White clothing for a killer was a tradition among the Parshendi. Although Zeth had not asked, his masters had explained why. White to be bold. White to not blend into the night. White to give warning. For if you were going to assassinate a man, he was entitled to see you coming. Seth turned right, taking the hallway directly toward the king's chambers. Torches burned on the walls, their light unsatisfying to him. A meal of thin broth after a long fast. Tiny flame spread danced around them like insects made solely of congealed light. The torches were useful to him. He reached for his pouch and the spheres it contained, but then he hesitated when he saw more of the blue lights ahead. A pair of stormlight lamps hanging on the wall, brilliant sapphires glowing at their hearts. Seth walked up to one of these, holding out his hand to cup it around the glass-shrouded gemstone.
You there!
There were 2 guards at the intersection, double guard, for there were savages abroad in Kolinar this night. True, those savages were supposed to be allies now, but alliances could be shallow things indeed. This one wouldn't last the hour. Seth looked as the 2 guards approached. They carried spears. They weren't light eyes, and were therefore forbidden the sword. Their painted red breastplates were ornate, however, as were their helms. They might be dark-eyed, but they were high-ranking citizens with honored positions in the royal guard. Stopping a few feet away, the guard at the front gestured with his spear.
Go on now. This is no place for you.
He had tan Alethi skin and a thin mustache that ran all the way around his mouth, becoming a beard at the bottom. Zeth didn't move.
Well, what are you waiting for?
Seth drew forth the stormlight. It streamed into him, siphoned from the twin sapphire lamps on the walls, sucked in as if by his deep inhalation. The stormlight raged inside of him, and the hallway suddenly grew darker, falling into shade like a hilltop cut off from the sun by a transient cloud. Seth could feel the light's warmth, its fury, like a tempest that had been injected directly into his veins. The power of it was invigorating, but dangerous. It pushed him to act, to move, to strike. Holding his breath, he clung to the stormlight. He could still feel it leaking out. Stormlight could be held for only a short time, a few minutes at most. It leaked away, the human body too porous a container. He had heard that the Voidbringers could hold it in perfectly. But then, did they even exist? His punishment declared that they didn't. His honor demanded that they did. Afire with holy energy, Zeth turned to the guards. They could see that he was leaking stormlight, wisps of it curling from his skin like luminescent smoke. The lead guard squinted, frowning. Zeth was sure the man had never seen anything like it before. As far as he knew, Zeth had killed every stonewalker who had ever seen what he could do.
What are you? Spirit or man?
What am I?
A bit of light leaked from his lips as he looked past the man down the long hallway.
I'm sorry.
Seth blinked. Lashing himself to that distant point down the hallway, stormlight raged from him in a flash, chilling his skin, and the ground immediately stopped pulling him downward. Instead, he was pulled toward the distant point. It was as if, to him, the direction had suddenly become down. This was a basic lashing, first of his three kinds of lashings. It gave him the ability to manipulate whatever force, spren, or god it was that held men to the ground. With this lashing, he could bind people or objects to different surfaces or in different directions. From Zeth's perspective, the hallway was now a deep shaft down which he was falling, and the two guards stood on one of the sides. They were shocked when Zeth's feet hit them, one for each face, throwing them over. Zeth shifted his view and lashed himself to the floor. The light leaked from him. The floor of the hallway again became down, and he landed between the two guards, clothes crackling and dropping flakes of frost. He rose, beginning the process of summoning his shard blade. One of the guards fumbled for his spear. Seth reached down, touching the soldier's shoulder while looking up. He focused on a point above him while willing the light out of his body and into the guard, lashing the poor man to the ceiling. Light trailing from his form, he crashed into the ceiling and dropped his spear. To kill. It was the greatest of sins. And yet here Zeth stood, truthless, profanely walking on stones used for building. And it would not end. As truthless, there was only one life he was forbidden to take. And that was his own. At the tenth beat of his heart, his shard blade dropped into his waiting hand. It formed as if condensing from mist, water beading along the metal length. His shard blade was long and thin, edged on both sides, smaller than most others. Seth swept it out, carving a line in the stone floor and passing through the second guard's neck. As always, the shard blade killed oddly. Though it cut easily through stone, steel, or anything inanimate, the metal fuzzed when it touched living skin. It traveled through the guard's neck without leaving a mark, but once it did, the man's eyes smoked and burned. They blackened, shriveling up in his head, and he slumped forward, dead. The shard blade did not cut living flesh. It severed the soul itself. The first guard had managed to get to his feet, even though they were planted on the ceiling of the hallway.
Shardbearer! A shardbearer assaults the King's Hall! To arms!
Finally.
Seth's use of stormlight was unfamiliar to the guards, but they knew a shard blade when they saw one. Zeth bent down and picked up the spear that had fallen from above. As he did so, he released the breath he'd been holding since drawing in the stormlight. It sustained him while he held it, but those two lanterns hadn't contained much of it, so he would need to breathe again soon. The light began to leak away more quickly now, and he wasn't holding his breath. Zeth set the spear's butt against the stone floor, then looked upward. The guard above stopped shouting, his eyes opening wide as the tails of his shirt began to slip downward, the earth now reasserting its dominance. The light steaming off his body dwindled. He looked down at Zeth, down at the spear tip pointing directly at his heart. Violet's spear spren crawled out of the stone ceiling around him. The light ran out. The guard fell. Zeth let the spear fall away. Shard blade in hand, he turned down a side corridor following the map he'd memorized. He ducked around a corner and flattened himself against the wall just as a troop of guards reached the dead men. His instructions were clear. Kill the king, but be seen doing it. Let the Alethi know he was coming and what he was doing. Why? Why did the Parshendi agree to this treaty only to send an assassin the very night of its signing? More gemstones glowed on the walls of the hallway here. King Gavilar liked lavish display, and he couldn't know that he was leaving sources of power for Zeth to use in his lashings. The things Zeth did hadn't been seen for millennia. Histories from those times were all but non-existent, and the legends were horribly inaccurate. Zeth peeked back out into the corridor. One of the guards at the intersection saw him.
There he is!
Zeth made sure they got a good look, then ducked away. He drew in the stormlight from the lanterns. His body came alive with it, and his speed increased, his muscles bursting with energy. Light became a storm inside of him. His blood thundered in his ears. It was terrible and wonderful at the same time. Two corridors down, one to the side. He threw open the door of a storage room, then hesitated a moment, just long enough for a guard to round the corner and see him before dashing into the room. Preparing for a full lashing, he raised his arms and commanded the stormlight to pool there, causing the skin to burst alight with radiance. Then he flung his hand out toward the doorframe, spraying white luminescence across it like paint. He slammed the door just as the guards arrived. The stormlight held the door in the frame with the strength of 100 arms. A full lashing bound objects together, holding them fast until the stormlight ran out. It took longer to create and drained stormlight far more quickly than a basic lashing. Zeth crossed the room in rapid strides, weaving around the shrouded furniture that had been stored there. It was of red cloth and deep, expensive woods. He reached the far wall, and preparing himself for yet another blasphemy, he raised his shard blade and slashed horizontally through the dark gray stone. The rock sliced easily. A shard blade could cut any inanimate object. Two vertical slashes followed, then one across the bottom, cutting a large square block. He pressed his hand against it, willing stormlight into the stone. He looked over his shoulder and focused on the shaking door, lashing the block in that direction. Frost crystallized on his clothing. Lashing something so large required a great deal of stormlight. The tempest within him stilled, like a storm reduced to a drizzle. He stepped aside. The large stone block shuddered, sliding into the room. Normally, moving the block would have been impossible. Its own weight would have held it against the stones below. Yet now, that same weight pulled it free. For the block, the direction of the room's door was down. The block slid free of the wall and tumbled through the air, smashing furniture. The soldiers finally broke through the door, staggering into the room just as the enormous block crashed into them. Zeth turned his back and stepped through his new hole, entering the hallway outside. He walked slowly, drawing stormlight from the lamps he passed, siphoning it to him and stoking anew the tempest within. As the lamps dimmed, the corridor darkened. A thick wooden door stood at the end, and as he approached, small fearspren shaped like globs of purple goo began to wriggle from the masonry, pointing toward the doorway. They were drawn by the terror being felt on the other side. Zeth pushed the door open, entering the last corridor leading to the king's chambers. Tall red ceramic vases lined the pathway, and they were interspersed with nervous soldiers. They flanked a long, narrow rug. It was red, like a river of blood. The spearmen in front didn't wait for him to get close. They broke into a trot, lifting their short throwing spears. Zeth slammed his hand to the side, pushing stormlight into the doorframe. Using the third and final type of lashing, a reverse lashing. This one worked differently from the other two. It did not make the doorframe emit stormlight. Indeed, it seemed to pull nearby light into it, giving it a strange penumbra. The spearman threw, and Zeth stood still, hand on the doorframe. A reverse slashing required his constant touch, but took comparatively little stormlight. During one, anything that approached him, particularly lighter objects, was instead pulled toward the lashing itself. The spears veered in the air, splitting around him and slamming into the wooden frame. As he felt them hit, Zeth leaped into the air and lashed himself to the right wall. He immediately reoriented his perspective. To his eyes, he wasn't standing on the wall, the soldiers were. The blood-red carpet streaming between them like a long tapestry. Zeth bolted down the hallway, striking with his shard blade, shearing through the necks of two men who had thrown spears at him. Their eyes burned, and they collapsed. The other guards had trouble. They were disoriented by the oddity of striking at someone who hung on the wall. Zeth flipped into the air, tucking into a roll, and lashed himself back to the floor. He hit the ground in the midst of the soldiers, completely surrounded, but holding a shard blade. According to legend, the shard blades were first carried by the Knights Radiant uncounted ages ago, gifts of their god granted to allow them to fight horrors of rock and flame, dozens of feet tall, foes whose eyes burned with hatred, the Void Bringers. When your foe had skin as hard as stone itself, steel was useless. Something supernatural was required. Zeth rose from his crouch, loose white clothes rippling, jaw clenched against his sins. He struck out, his weapon flashing with reflected torchlight. Elegant, wide swings, three of them, one after another. He could neither close his ears to the screams that followed, nor avoid seeing the men fall. They dropped around him like toys knocked over by a child's careless kick. If the blade touched a man's spine, he died, eyes burning. If it cut through the core of a limb, it killed that limb. One soldier stumbled away from Zeth, arm flopping uselessly on his shoulder. He would never be able to feel it or use it again. Zeth lowered his shard blade, standing among the cinder-eyed corpses. Here, in Alethkar, men often spoke of the legends of mankind's hard-won victory over the Voidbringers. But when weapons created to fight nightmares were turned against common soldiers, the lives of men became cheap things indeed. Zeth turned and continued on his way, the shard blade, as always, glistening silver and clean. When one killed with a blade, there was no blood. That seemed like a sign. The shard blade was just a tool. It could not be blamed for the murders. The door at the end of the hallway burst open. Zeth froze as a small group of soldiers rushed out, ushering a man in regal robes, his head ducked as if to avoid arrows. The soldiers wore deep blue, the color of the king's guard, and the corpses didn't make them stop and gawk. They were prepared for what a shardbearer could do. They opened a side door and shoved their ward through, several leveling spears at Zeth as they backed out. Another figure stepped from the king's quarters. He wore glistening blue armor made of smoothly interlocking plates. Unlike common plate armor, however, this armor had no leather or mail visible at the joints. Just smaller plates, fitting together with intricate precision. The armor was beautiful, the blue inlaid with golden bands around the edges of each piece of plate. The helm ornamented with three waves of small horn-like wings. Shard plate. The customary complement to a shard blade. The newcomer carried a sword as well, an enormous shard blade, 6 feet long, with a design along the blade like burning flames, a weapon of silvery metal that gleamed and almost seemed to glow. A weapon designed to slay dark gods, a larger counterpart to the one Zeth carried. Zeth hesitated. He didn't recognize the armor. He had not been warned that he would be set at this task, and hadn't been given proper time to memorize the various suits of plate or blades owned by the Alethi. But a shardbearer would have to be dealt with before he chased the king. He could not leave such a foe behind. Besides, perhaps a shardbearer could defeat him, kill him, and end his miserable life. His lashings wouldn't work directly on someone in shardplate, and the armor would enhance the man, strengthen him. Seth's honor would not allow him to betray his mission or seek death, but if that death occurred, he would welcome it. The shardbearer struck, and Zeth lashed himself to the side of the hallway, leaping with a twist and landing on the wall. He danced backward, blade held at the ready. The Shardbearer fell into an aggressive posture, using one of the swordplay stances favored here in the East. He moved far more nimbly than one would expect for a man in such bulky armor. Shard plate was special, as ancient and magical as the blades it complemented. The Shardbearer struck. Zeth skipped to the side and lashed himself to the ceiling as the Shardbearer's blade sliced into the wall. Feeling a thrill at the contest, Zeth dashed forward and attacked downward with an overhand blow, trying to hit the Shardbearer's helm. The man ducked, going down on one knee, letting Zeth's blade cleave empty air. Zeth leaped backward as the Shardbearer swung upward with his blade, slicing into the ceiling. Zeth didn't own a set of plate himself and didn't care to. His lashings interfered with the gemstones that powered shard plate, and he had to choose one or the other. As the Shardbearer turned, Zeth sprinted forward across the ceiling. As expected, the Shardbearer swung again, and Zeth leaped to the side, rolling. He came up from his roll and flipped, lashing himself to the floor again. He spun to land on the ground behind the Shardbearer. He slammed his blade into the opponent's open back. Unfortunately, there was one major advantage plate offered. It could block a shard blade. Zeth's weapon hit solidly, causing a web of glowing lines to spread out across the back of the armor, and stormlight began to leak free from them. Shard plate didn't dent or bend like common metal. Zeth would have to hit the Shardbearer in the same location at least once more to break through. Zeth danced out of range as the Shardbearer swung in anger, trying to cut at Zeth's knees. The tempest within Zeth gave him many advantages, including the ability to quickly recover from small wounds, but it would not restore limbs killed by a shard blade. He rounded the Shardbearer, then picked a moment and dashed forward. The Shardbearer swung again, but Zeth briefly lashed himself to the ceiling for lift. He shot into the air, cresting over the swing, then immediately lashed himself back to the floor. He struck as he landed. But the Shardbearer recovered quickly and executed a perfect follow-through stroke, coming within a finger of hitting Zeth. The man was dangerously skilled with that blade. Many Shardbearers depended too much on the power of their weapon and armor. This man was different. Zeth jumped to the wall and struck at the Shardbearer with quick, terse attacks, like a snapping eel. The Shardbearer fended him off with wide, sweeping counters. His blade's length kept Zeth at bay.
This is taking too long.
If the king slipped away into hiding, Zeth would fail in his mission no matter how many people he killed. Each second this fight lasted was another for the king's escape. It was time to be reckless. Zeth launched into the air, lashing himself to the other end of the hallway and falling feet first toward his adversary. The Shardbearer didn't hesitate to swing. But Zeth lashed himself down at an angle, dropping immediately. The shard blade swished through the air above him. He landed in a crouch, using his momentum to throw himself forward and swung at the Shardbearer's side where the plate had cracked. He hit with a powerful blow. That piece of the plate shattered, bits of molten metal streaking away. The Shardbearer dropped to one knee, raising a hand to his side. Zeth raised a foot to the man's side and shoved him backward with a stormlight-enhanced kick. The heavy Shardbearer crashed into the door of the king's quarters, smashing it and falling partway into the room beyond. Zeth left him, ducking instead through the doorway to the right, following the way the king had gone. The hallway here had the same red carpet, and stormlight lamps on the walls gave Zeth a chance to recharge the tempest within. Energy blazed within him again, and he sped up. If he could get far enough ahead, he could deal with the king, then turn back to fight off the Shardbearer. It wouldn't be easy. A full lashing on a doorway wouldn't stop a Shardbearer, and that plate would let the man run supernaturally fast. Zeth glanced over his shoulder. The Shardbearer wasn't following. The man sat up in his armor, looking dazed. Zeth could just barely see him, sitting in the doorway, surrounded by broken bits of wood. Perhaps Zeth had wounded him more than he thought. Or maybe. Zeth froze. He thought of the ducking head of the man who'd been rushed out, face obscured. The Shardbearer still wasn't following.
He's so skilled. It is said that few men can rival Gavilar Kulin's swordsmanship. Could it be?
Z- Seth turned and dashed back, trusting his instincts. As soon as the Shardbearer saw him, he climbed to his feet with alacrity. Seth ran faster.
What is the safest place for a king? In the hands of some guards fleeing, or protected in a suit of shardplate left behind, dismissed as a bodyguard? Clever.
The formerly sluggish Shardbearer fell into another battle stance. Seth attacked with renewed vigor, swinging his blade in a flurry of strikes. The Shardbearer,
a king,
aggressively struck out with broad, sweeping blows. Seth pulled away from one of these, feeling the wind of the weapon passing just inches before him. He timed his next move, then dashed forward, ducking underneath the king's follow-through. The king, expecting another strike at his side, twisted with his arm held protectively to block the hole in his plate. That gave Seth the room to run past him and into the king's chambers. The king spun around to follow, but Seth ran through the lavishly furnished chamber, flinging out his hand, touching pieces of furniture he passed. He infused them with stormlight, lashing them to a point behind the king. The furniture tumbled as if the room had been turned on its side, couches, chairs, and tables dropping toward the surprised king. Gavilar made the mistake of chopping at them with his shard blade. The weapon easily sheared through a large couch, but the pieces still crashed into him, making him stumble. A footstool hit him next, throwing him to the ground. Gavilar rolled out of the way of the furniture and charged forward. Plate leaked streams of light from the cracked sections. Seth gathered himself, then leaped into the air, lashing himself backward and to the right as the king arrived. He zipped out of the way of the king's blow, then lashed himself forward with two basic lashings in a row. Stormlight flashed out of him, clothing freezing, as he was pulled toward the king at twice the speed of a normal fall. The king's posture indicated surprise as Seth lurched in midair, then spun toward him swinging. He slammed his blade into the king's helm, then immediately lashed himself to the ceiling and fell upward, slamming into the stone roof above. He'd lashed himself in too many directions too quickly, and his body had lost track, making it difficult to land gracefully. He stumbled back to his feet. Below, the king stepped back, trying to get into position to swing up at Seth. The man's helm was cracked, leaking stormlight, and he stood protectively, defending the side with a broken plate. The king used a one-handed swing, reaching for the ceiling. Seth immediately lashed himself downward, judging that the king's attack would leave him unable to get his sword back in time. Seth underestimated his opponent. The king stepped into Seth's attack, trusting his helm to absorb the blow. Just as Seth hit the helm a second time, shattering it, Gavilar punched with his offhand, slamming his gauntleted fist into Seth's face. Blinding light flashed in Seth's eyes, a counterpoint to the sudden agony that crashed across his face. Everything blurred, his vision fading. Pain, so much pain. Stormlight left him in a rush, and he slammed back into something hard. The balcony doors. More pain broke out across his shoulders as if someone had stabbed him with 100 daggers, and he hit the ground and rolled to a stop, muscles trembling. The blow would have killed an ordinary man.
No time for pain. No time for pain. No time for pain.
He blinked, shaking his head, the world blurry and dark.
Am I blind?
No. It was dark outside. He was on the wooden balcony. The force of the blow had thrown him through the doors.
The shard bearer.
Seth stumbled to his feet, vision swimming. Blood streamed from the side of his face, and stormlight rose from his skin, blinding his left eye. The light. It would heal him, if it could. His jaw felt unhinged.
Broken?
He dropped his shard blade. A lumbering shadow moved in front of him. The Shardbearer's armor had leaked enough stormlight that the king was having trouble walking. But he was coming. Seth kneeled, infusing stormlight into the wooden balcony, lashing it downward. The air frosted around him. The tempest roared, traveling down his arms into the wood. He lashed it downward, then did it again. He lashed a fourth time as Gavilar stepped onto the balcony. It lurched under the extra weight. The Shardbearer hesitated. Seth lashed the balcony downward a fifth time. The balcony support shattered, and the entire structure broke free from the building. Seth used his final bit of stormlight to lash himself to the side of the building. He fell to the side, passing the shocked Shardbearer, then hit the wall and rolled. The balcony dropped away, the king looking up with shock as he lost his footing. The fall was brief. In the moonlight, Seth watched solemnly, vision still fuzzy, blinded in one eye, as the structure crashed to the stone ground below. Still standing on the side of the wall, Seth climbed to his feet. He felt weak. He'd used up his stormlight too quickly, straining his body. He stumbled down the side of the building, approaching the wreckage, barely able to remain standing. The king still moved. Shardplate would protect a man from such a fall, but a large length of bloodied wood stuck up through Gavilar's side, piercing him where Seth had broken the plate earlier. Seth knelt down, inspecting the man's pain-racked face. Strong features, square chin, black beard flecked with white, striking pale green eyes. Gavilar Colin.
I expected you to come.
Seth reached underneath the front of the man's breastplate, tapping the straps there. They unfastened, and he pulled the front of the breastplate free, exposing the gemstones on its interior. Two had been cracked and burned out. Three still glowed. Numb, Seth breathed in sharply, absorbing the light. The storm began to rage again. More light rose from the side of his face, repairing his damaged skin and bones. The pain was still great. Stormlight healing was far from instantaneous. It would be hours before he recovered.
You can tell Thidakar that he's too late.
I don't know who that is.
Seth held his hand to the side, resummoning his shard blade.
Then who? Restores? Sadius? I never thought...
My masters are the Parshendi.
The Parshendi? That makes no sense.
Gavilar reached toward his chest, fumbling at a pocket. He pulled out a small, crystalline sphere tied to a chain.
You must take this. They must not get it. Tell my brother. He must find the most important words a man can say.
Gavilar fell still. Seth hesitated, then knelt down and took the sphere. It was odd, unlike any he'd seen before. Though it was completely dark, it seemed to glow somehow, with a light that was black.
The Parshendi? That makes no sense.
Nothing makes sense anymore.
Seth tucked the strange sphere away.
It's all unraveling. I am sorry, King of the Alethi. I doubt that you care. Not anymore, at least. At least you won't have to watch the world ending with the rest of us.
Beside the king's body, his shard blade materialized from mist, falling to the stones now that its master was dead. It was worth a fortune. Kingdoms had fallen as men vied to possess a single shard blade.
Tell my brother!
To Zeth's people, a dying request was sacred. He took the king's hand, dipping it in the man's own blood, then used it to scrawl on the wood.
He must find the most important words a man can say.
With that, Seth escaped into the night. He left the king's shard blade. He had no use for it. The blade Seth already carried was curse enough.
You've killed me. Bastards, you've killed me. While the sun is still hot. I die.
Collected on the fifth day of the week Chach of the month Betab of the year 1171, 10 seconds before death. Subject was a dark-eyed soldier, 31 years of age. Sample is considered questionable.
5 years later.
I'm gonna die, aren't I?
The weathered veteran beside Sen turned and inspected him. The veteran wore a full beard cut short. At the sides, the black hairs were starting to give way to gray.
I'm gonna die. Oh, Stormfather, I'm gonna die.
How old are you, son?
Sen didn't remember the man's name. It was hard to recall anything while watching that other army form lines across the rocky battlefield. That lining up seemed so civil, neat, organized. Short spears in the front ranks, long spears and javelins next, archers at the sides. The dark-eyed spearman wore equipment like Sen's, leather jerkin and knee-length skirt, with a simple steel cap and a matching breastplate. Many of the light eyes had full suits of armor. They sat astride horses, their honor guards clustering around them with breastplates that gleamed burgundy and deep forest green. Were there shardbearers among them? Brightlord Amaram wasn't a shardbearer. Were any of his men?
What if I have to fight one?
Ordinary men didn't kill shardbearers. It had happened so infrequently that each occurrence was now legendary.
It's really happening. It's really happening.
This wasn't a drill in the camp. This wasn't training out in the field swinging sticks. This was real. Facing that fact, his heart pounding like a frightened animal in his chest, his legs unsteady, Sen suddenly realized.
Oh, I'm a coward. I shouldn't have left the herds. I shouldn't have left...
Son, how old are you?
15, sir.
And what's your name?
Sen, sir.
I'm Dalet.
Dalet. Dalet, I'm gonna die, aren't I?
No, you're gonna be just fine. Keep your head on straight. Stay with the squad.
But I've barely had 3 months training. I can barely hold this spear. Oh, Stormfather, I'm dead. I can't...
Son, you are going to be fine.
How can you know?
Because, lad, you're in Kaladin's Stormblessed squad.
The other soldiers nearby nodded in agreement. Behind them, waves and waves of soldiers were lining up. Thousands of them. Sen stood right at the front, with Kaladin's squad of about 30 other men. Why had Sen been moved to a new squad at the last moment? It had something to do with camp politics.
Why is this squad at the very front, where casualties are bound to be the greatest?
Small fearspren like globs of purplish goo began to climb up out of the ground and gather around his feet. In a moment of sheer panic, he nearly dropped his spear and scrambled away. Dalet's hand tightened on his shoulder. Looking up into Dalet's confident black eyes, Sen hesitated.
Did you piss before we formed ranks?
I didn't have time to...
Go now.
Here?
If you don't, you'll end up with it running down your leg in battle, distracting you, maybe killing you. Do it.
Embarrassed, Sen handed Dalet his spear and relieved himself onto the stones. When he finished, he shot glances at those next to him. None of Kaladin's soldiers smirked. They stood steady, spears to their sides, shields on their backs. The enemy army was almost finished. The field between the two forces was bare, flat, slick rock, remarkably even and smooth, broken only by occasional rock buds. It would have made a good pasture. The warm wind blew in Sen's face, thick with the watery scents of last night's high storm.
Dalet!
A man walked up through the ranks carrying a short spear that had two leather knife sheaths strapped to the haft. The newcomer was a young man, perhaps 4 years older than Sen's 15, but he was taller by several fingers than even Dalet. He wore the common leathers of a spearman, but under them was a pair of dark trousers. That wasn't supposed to be allowed. His black Galethi hair was shoulder-length and wavy, his eyes a dark brown. He also had knots of white cord on the shoulders of his jerkin, marking him as a squad leader. The 30 men around Sen snapped to attention, raising their spears in salute.
This is Kaladin Stormblessed? This youth?
Dalet, we're soon going to have a new recruit. I need you to...
Kaladin had noticed Sen.
He found his way here just a few minutes ago, sir. I've been getting him ready.
Well done. I paid good money to get that boy away from Gare. That man's so incompetent, he might as well be fighting for the other side.
What? Why would anyone pay to get me?
What do you think about the field?
Several of the other spearmen nearby raised hands to shade from the sun, scanning the rocks.
That dip next to the two boulders on the far right?
Footing's too rough.
Aye, perhaps it is. What about the short hill over there? Far enough to avoid the first fall, close enough to not get too far ahead.
Kaladin nodded, though Sen couldn't see what they were looking at.
Looks good.
The rest of you louts hear that?
The men raised their spears high.
Keep an eye on the new boy, Dalit. He won't know the signs.
Of course.
He's smiling. How can he smile? Does that mean the enemy is ready?
Even though Sen had just relieved himself, he felt a trickle of urine run down his leg.
Stay firm.
Kaladin trotted down the front line to talk to the next squad leader over. Behind Sen and the others, the dozens of ranks were still growing. The archers on the sides prepared to fire.
Don't worry, son. We'll be fine. Squad leader Kaladin is lucky.
The soldier on the other side of Sen nodded. He was a lanky red-haired Vaden with darker tan skin than the Alethi.
Why is he fighting in an Alethi army?
That's right. Kaladin, he's Stormblessed, right? Sure he is. We lost only one man last battle.
But someone did die.
People always die. Our squad loses the fewest. You'll see.
Kaladin finished conferring with the other squad leader, then jogged back to his team. Though he carried a short spear meant to be wielded one-handed with a shield in the other hand, his was a hand longer than those held by the other men.
At the ready, men!
Unlike the other squad leaders, Kaladin didn't fall into rank, but stood out in front of his squad. The men around Sen shuffled, excited. Kaladin remained motionless, staring down the other army.
Steady, men!
Behind, a light-eyed officer passed on horseback.
Be ready to fight! I want their blood, men! Fight and kill!
Steady! Be ready to run.
Run? But we've been trained to march in formation. Stay in our line.
Sure, but most of the men don't have much more training than you. Those who can fight well end up getting sent to the Shattered Plains to battle the Parshendi. Kaladin's trying to get us into shape to go there to fight for the king. Most of these men here will break and charge. The Light Eyes aren't good enough commanders to keep them in formation. So stay with us and run.
Should I have my shield out?
Around Kaladin's team, the other ranks were unhooking their shields, but Kaladin's squad left their shields on their backs.
Go!
Sen didn't have much choice. The entire army started moving in a clamor. As Dalit predicted, the steady march didn't last long. The line disintegrated. As soon as that happened, Kaladin's squad broke into a dash, running out into the front at full speed. Sen scrambled to keep up, panicked and terrified. The ground wasn't as smooth as it had seemed, and he nearly tripped on a hidden rock bud, vines withdrawn into its shell. He righted himself and kept going, holding his spear in one hand, his shield on his back. The distant army was in motion as well, their soldiers charging down the field. There was no semblance of a battle formation or a careful line. This wasn't anything like the training had claimed it would be. Sen didn't even know who the enemy was. A landlord was encroaching on Bright Lord Amaran's territory, a land owned ultimately by High Prince Sadius. It was a border skirmish, and Sen thought it was another Alethi princedom. Why were they fighting each other? Perhaps the king would have to put a stop to it, but he was on the Shattered Plains, seeking vengeance for the murder of King Gavilar 5 years before.
The enemy had a lot of archers!
Sen's panic climbed to a peak as the first wave of arrows flew into the air. He stumbled again, itching to take out his shield. But Dalit grabbed his arm and yanked him forward. Hundreds of arrows split the sky, dimming the sun. They arced and fell, dropping like sky eels upon their prey. Amaran's soldiers raised shields, but not Kaladin's squad. No shields for them. And the arrow slammed into the middle ranks of Amaran's army behind him. Sen glanced over his shoulder, still running. The arrows fell behind him.
Why? How did you know?
They want the arrows to hit where the men are the most crowded, where they'll have the greatest chance of finding a body.
Several other groups in the van left their shields lowered, but most ran awkwardly with their shields angled up to the sky, worried about arrows that couldn't hit them. That slowed them, and they risked getting trampled by the men behind who were getting hit. Sen itched to raise his shield anyway. It felt so wrong to run without it. The second volley hit. Kaladin's squad